This is DGMT's Learning Lunch, and I'm your host, Rahima Esop. Active citizenry contributes to building healthy societies and democracies, which is why many civil society organizations have placed promoting active citizenry at the core of their strategies. There are various ways in which civil society organizations can do this. For example, they are raising awareness about civic rights and responsibilities. They are building capacity within communities through leadership programs, creating platforms for engagement, and building networks. But today, I want to talk about how communications tools can be utilized by civil society organizations to encourage active citizenry. So joining me today to talk about this are Zamayiha Peter, Communications Manager at Activate Change Drivers, and Emma O'Shaughnessy, the Project Lead of Amplify Mobilize Change. Both are projects of DGMT. I want to start with a personal observation. I think active citizenry is one of those complex terms that many people think they understand better than they actually do. This phenomenon is known as the illusion of explanatory depth. So it would be useful to start with a quick framing of what we mean when we use the term in the context of this conversation. So I poked around on the internet looking for a succinct definition, and the one I like the most is on the Open Society Foundation's website. It says that active citizenry, or active citizenship, is when people get involved in their local communities and democracy at all levels. It can be as small as a campaign to clean up your streets, or as big as educating young people about democratic values, skills, and participation. Now that we've framed what we are talking about, let's dive into how we can use communications tools to promote active citizenry for social change. Emma, this is right up your alley, isn't it? Because you lead a project that helps civil society-based communication practitioners to use online tools more efficiently. Tell me about the project.
Thanks, Rahima. We have a twofold approach. The one is around efficiency, so really helping organizations see how they can plan and use tools better, meeting their goals and matching the vision that they have of creating impact, whether that's mobilizing communities or sharing knowledge or something more kind of action orientated, like shifting community responses to policy, etc. So the efficiency part of that is really looking at how tools could be used better, whether it's social media tools, storage of files, sharing files across devices, as well as developing content that's, you know, rich and exciting and interesting and well formatted for mobile. And then the other part of what we do is talk about how organizations and members of organizations can start to shift their relationships to people on the ground through digital media and tools, and how this is an incredibly rich resource for amplifying and mobilizing change from the ground up, as opposed to just being a mechanism for delivering information. So we see communication tools as being highly active, highly citizen-centric, for lack of a better word, community-orientated, and action-driven. And it's a DGMT project. We've been 5 years in the field, and we've worked with about 130 different organizations from across South Africa.
Thanks, Emma. That's really useful in helping us to understand the project and how it fits within civil society. Given how I've framed the concept of active citizenry in my introduction, what are some of the ways in which civil society should be using online communications tools?
So one of the biggest kind of shifts towards a different kind of practice is getting organizations to see their communication as a tool that enables change and can be utilized as a form of change making, whether you're writing a piece of content or creating a social media campaign or developing a tool that allows people to interact with you. It's this vital mode of change. And so we shift organizations from thinking about comms as being a reporting function of the organization where donors can hear about what's happening on the ground, to something that's actually this primary interface with communities. And often organizations struggle with what that might mean and feel like they have to go through a different kind of planning process to get there. And often it's just about shifting gears and getting team leaders or members of the governance structure to see communication as a tool for change rather than being a reporting asset. So that's one of the first things we do. And the second thing we do is then look at how technology enables the kinds of relationships that organizations want to have with their different communities and audiences, as opposed to technology that's just being used because someone told them they should be using it. So we often distill and move organizations away from apps or platforms or channels that aren't actually serving them in their desire to create these active relationships that lead to social change. We help people refine what change looks like. So there's a lot of work and evaluation frameworks for programs where we say when we measure social change, when we look at behavioral change on a ground level with a programmatic intervention, we define it as this. It's not often as developed in communication, especially not with technology. So we look at what that means and how can we become more rigorous with how we track the change that comes through our interventions with communication using online tools.
I want to touch on something that we spoke about offline. I mentioned in the beginning the definition of active citizenry that I found useful. But we were speaking earlier and you mentioned that that term is slightly problematic to you because it's not inclusive enough. Do you want to tell me a bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. So it was referenced to a conversation I had last year with one of our program participants, Accountability Lab, who works with different communities across the globe. And we spoke about what citizenship meant. And I had mentioned in various conversations with them this concept of active citizenship. And they had started to query it in their own work because citizenship doesn't include those who may not belong in a legal way or in a documented way. But also citizenship implies national boundaries and, you know, sort of politics that might be constraining. So not just reductive and not inclusive enough, but also not necessarily reflective of how people move into different spaces and what that future sort of globe would look like. And given how controversial citizenship is at the moment, if a number of organizations who especially work with governance on a political level are starting to question the way that we refer to what people are in their communities. And I think many of us can reflect on the fact that some of the most active members of communities may have come into those communities later on in their life, whether that's intranational or international. And many organizations work with members of communities in multiple settings who inhabit multiple modes of self. And I think the way that we see social change, and this is where communication tools are really interesting, especially when you're looking at technology, is that the whole purpose of digital and the whole reason why it's become this kind of endemic aspect of communication and building change is that it's fundamentally transnational. It doesn't subscribe to these citizenship borders and a one particular mode of being or one way of thinking of self, one particular attitude or angle. There's this high, high, high multiplicity in what the tools can do, but also how many people you can reach and who those people are. And I think not only from a sort of political point of view do we shift our language, but also if we're thinking about what digital tools can do, they definitely transverse those national lines and enable an active community that isn't necessarily going to look the same as one next door. And so instead of it being this question of how do we not say this word, it's rather saying when we do talk about active communities, making sure that we understand that people often inhabit these multiple roles and move between things. And that's something that is matched and reflected in how digital technology works.
I like that, active communities. And that brings me to you, Zamayiha, because your work at Activate is geared towards building an active network of change drivers. Let's call them an active community. Young people who are equipped with toolkits, mentorship and support to be able to make a difference in their communities all over South Africa. They are called Activators. Now, aside from online communication tools, Activate hosts workshops, in-person workshops, training workshops to equip these activators with resources in order to give them the tools that they need to be quote-unquote active citizens. Tell me about what you are doing in this space.
Thanks, Rahima. So at Activate, what we are doing is we have created an environment for young people in their full diversity to be capacitated with tools that will enable them to fully participate in this country's democracy. Practically, what we have done is we have created a network that is built and led and focused on young people. Here, young people come and they gather to share learning experiences of what it means to be an active citizen in a democratic country. Our key focus is on capacitating young people with information on how to participate in your local community, how to, you know, access both local and national government. And in the last 10 years, we have built a network of young people that what we have done is encourage young people to leverage off of each other as a youth demographic to drive social change. Our view is that if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go further, plug into the network, share ideas, come hear what other young people are doing in KZN that you can, you know, relate to the Western Cape, and use this platform and mobilize each other as a youth demographic to drive social change. We have campaigns such as hashtag We Are Voting, hashtag This Freedom, and something called the Active Citizen Awards. And what we are doing with these campaigns is we are going into communities where young people are. We are helping them to develop tools and framing to identify problems in their communities and come up with solutions. And what we are doing with this is to say, you are in this community, you have the capacity to not only identify the issues that are happening in your community, but you also can be empowered to bring about change, you know, without having to necessarily refer to, you know, your local government or your national government, but, you know, tools to empower young people to, you know, in their personal capacity to realize change in their communities. And this work didn't begin this year. At Activate, it's in the DNA of the network and how we do life. We believe that, you know, before you arrive at the 2024 general election, it's important that you live and you habit a life of active citizenry, and you don't just focus it on a campaign or an election.
Samayiha, you recently hosted a writing workshop to surface and amplify a diversity of young people's voices. Tell me about who you were targeting with this particular initiative.
Part of what inspired the Writers Hub, Rahima, was Chimamanda Adichie Ngozi, the Nigerian novelist, and she often talks about the dangers of a single narrative. We believe at Activate that healthy democracy includes diverse and dynamic views. So we encourage young people to not just, you know, aspire to be documented on national platforms, but to be part of the storytelling, to write about what's happening in their communities. And so we established a Writers Hub early this year. And the purpose of the Writers Hub was to upskill, you know, aspiring writers in the network with tools and resources on how to write, how to do interviews, how to connect with the stories in your community, and how to elevate those. And so the Writers Hub really is an environment where we capacitate young people to become, you know, citizen journalists, and, you know, we affirm their voices. So what we do with their stories is we document them on our website, we document them on our social media platforms, but we also distribute them to national and community media. And in doing this, what we are saying to young people is that your voice can be heard, your voice is affirmed, and it's important that you take ownership of that voice.
So for the people listening to this podcast who may be interested in the Writers Hub, is there an opportunity for them to get involved, or is it a limited campaign, or are the individuals who participate in the Writers Hub all activators and carefully chosen? How does one get involved?
So the primary base at the moment for the Writers Hub is the network. So what we're doing in the first year is to pilot the effectiveness of, you know, how we have set up the network. We definitely do have an aspiration to not only develop the young people who are writers in our network, but young people across the country who have an interest to use writing as a social activism tool. Part of the reason that we are capacitating young people to become writers is we have framed the fact that writing is a form of activism. That, you know, in order to be called an activist, you don't necessarily have to be going onto the streets with protest action, but there's a great, you know, credibility, and there's a great legacy in your ability to write and to archive the narratives of your community as they happen.
Thanks, Samayiha. Your input reminded me of a quote that I read not too long ago. It's by the novelist George Orwell. He said that if people cannot write well, they cannot think well. And if they cannot think well, others will do their thinking for them. So absolutely, it's important for young people to use writing as a means for social activism. So this Writers Hub has over 40 young people, you mentioned, across the country. And you mentioned that they have been published in mainstream media. What is the impact so far of this type of, should we call it activism or advocacy or both?
I think two things are happening, Rahima. So the first is that there's a shaping of a skill in these writers. There's a building of a confidence in the ability to write and to identify social ills in their communities, right? Secondly, you know, there's an access to a platform where, you know, national discourse takes place and exposure of their thoughts and their realities at a national level. So what we're also getting is we're not just distributing to media. Media is coming back to the network and they're asking, are there any stories? What's happening in Mpumalanga? What's happening in KZN? What is the opinion of the young people in your network with regards to A, B, and C? And here what we are finding is that we have not only created a platform for young people to write, but we have created a bridge for the media to understand that, you know, we also have a role to play in the fourth estate, which is the media. And as active citizens, you know, hear our voice as young people, don't speak for us, create a platform for us to speak for ourselves.
Emma, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Civil society organizations have to make tough decisions about how best to allocate financial resources to achieve their desired outcomes. Often we find that spending on communications gets a small slice of the budget because it's seen as less important or dispensable. But your work is focused on elevating the value of communications in civil society. What are some of the common misconceptions that you have come up against when trying to convince civil society organizations of the value of online communications as a tool for social change?
The person who's doing the program, which would be that primary participant, who's a communication practitioner in some form, either as an organization leader who's also in charge of their own comms because they're a smaller organization, or, you know, sort of a community or coalition, or someone who's in this kind of official role as communication manager or communication officer. In any form they're in, those people who've motivated to join the program are usually 150% on board for why they think comms should be seen as a more vital component of strategy. What often happens is that value struggles to be communicated sort of outwards into the organization for lots of different reasons. And so when we look at why comms doesn't necessarily have that assimilation into core strategies, because it's the pieces, the tools for that aren't always sitting in a comms team. And so we sort of tackle that and say, how do you really define your strategy and advocate for that using the same theory of change model as your organizations, that you're speaking a language of your internal teams? Sometimes it's then that conversation that goes from a communication cell to another cell where it's hard to have that conversation internally for whatever reason. So there's like a culture that needs to be addressed, or just a document that needs to be produced in a certain kind of way that hasn't been produced yet. So often there's a sort of internal thing that needs to shift, and there might be multiple things that need to shift. And then the sort of higher level stuff, looking at what the organization leader might perceive comms to be doing, if it's a bigger organization, is often that things have been done a particular way for a very long time and comms is seen as relatively new and it hasn't got those same markers as a program might. And it does depend on the kind of organization. I mean, there's lots of teams that come on board our program and that exist here at DGMT, and Activate would be one of them. That's a project that also has this kind of campaign personality, where comms is clearly a vehicle for what the project's trying to achieve. But if an organization's been kind of historically a service-based organization, comms doesn't always have a natural place. And a comms team would have to work really hard and have really like a real strong handle on how to demonstrate that for someone else in the organization to really kind of open their minds to it. So that's something that sort of has to happen. And often those tools or the confidence to do that is lacking. And that's definitely sort of strategic action plan oriented work. Sometimes the support isn't there, so you just don't have that other person who can endorse what you're saying and agree with you. And what I've seen, very beautiful partnerships emerging between comms and monitoring and evaluation. So when there's an M&E and comms capacity in an organization, often it's easier to then get that kind of argument over the line. I think on a sort of broad sector level, comms is still seen as window dressing in some ways and not really seen as a tool for change. And again, the narratives don't always exist for demonstrating what that looks like. And so it's not that the capacity to see things differently isn't there, it's just not always visible enough and being demonstrated enough. Social media is still kind of seen as unserious and this funny space, this nebulous space of community, which again doesn't have the defined narrative around actually it's a vehicle for change and engagement. What does that look like? A lot of people still see their funders as their main audiences, and that kind of, although that's very important and funders are one of the core audiences for most organizations, speaking to your funders in your social media channels can kind of stop a strategy in its tracks because A, funders are unlikely to actually be reading that content, and two, it's not what communities want, so they sort of disappear and you're not getting that interactive, popular content and experiences out there, which is what social media demands. People often see comms as social media, but it's also websites and custom tools and WhatsApp, which can be used for all sorts of incredible things nowadays. That again, it's just that not everybody's seeing the potential of what that looks like.
You use the term window dressing, and I completely get what you mean by that. Often the work is sort of seen as frivolous and they don't necessarily get a seat at the strategy table, which is unfortunate. So have you been able to firm up your elevator pitch to organizational leaders about why comms professionals should get a seat at the strategy table?
The first point is communication practitioners are often more in tune with what people want on the ground and therefore should be able to inform strategy because they have information, whether it's sentiment, analytics, responses to content. You know, there's so much power in communication and it should be flowing back into the organization in a productive and strategic way. Two, comms should be using the same theory of change model, and there's no reason for that then not to be seen as a core component of strategic outputs. And I think often it's just about making sure that the comms person that you have in place is very comfortable with that. Because again, it's a senior position. It should be, you know, one of the positions at least should be senior enough to say, I think strategically this is how we need to operate and here is the evidence and I can bring that back into the room. The third piece is, sure, there does have to be quite a lot of engagement with leaders who may not see that or understand that. And part of what we do is say, like, what pieces are missing when you want to sit with someone who might be more established in a particular way of thinking about social change? How do you demonstrate that? And that's, you know, equipping comms people with the tools they need as well as the confidence to say, if you see it like this, it's pretty clear that it's a strategic capacity that is flowing through every aspect of our organization and therefore needs to be given the credibility and seen as a highly credible aspect of our organization's work. And then the last piece is, which is something that's coming up more recently, is that communications is a form of social leadership. So if you put an op-ed out or if you create something particularly evocative or kind of community enhancing through one channel and you get a lot of virality or a lot of responses, a comms person needs to be able to respond to that communication that comes back from that, whether it's questions, whether it's queries, whether it's something that gets quite difficult to manage. And that comms person and the comms teams needs to be equipped and enabled with the power to act in the moment without it going through a sort of pipeline of sign-offs that then kind of kills the energy of what that communication flow looks like with the public. So in terms of public interface, comms is often on the call face. And so again, it's pretty clear that organizations need to enable comms through delegating authority, through embracing change, because often comms has a lot of change that goes with it, and appointing the right people who can then really kind of grapple with strategy and demonstrate that and bring that back into the organization.
Thanks, Emma. I can tell that you've definitely been practicing that elevator pitch, and it definitely worked on me. Now, as we come to the end of this podcast, I want to give both of you an opportunity to tell our listeners how they can get involved in the projects that you mentioned. So let's start with you, Emma. How can people get involved with Amplify Mobilize Change?
So there's three ways. The one is to join our open workshop community where you can sign up on our website and you join a database and we alert you when we have a workshop. And the workshops we run generally are quite similar to Activate, but less focused on writing, but more on the strategic stuff. So kind of planning and audience research and the thornier stuff that tends to need to be done first before you can start getting creative. That's one way, open to anybody in the sector. Even if you're not in the sector, we're still interested to hear from you, but it's obviously designed for those working with nonprofit communication and particularly motivated around advocacy work. We have our self-paced learning, which is launching very soon in a couple of weeks. If you want to sign up for that, you can sign up with the open workshop series link, which is on the website. And that'll be, as I said, more like a MOOC model, massively open online course, where we don't manage your process. We just give you access to modules that we have available, which we think are going to be rich. There's templates and tools and all sorts of things. It's not supported by the team, though. And then if you're interested in our more kind of intensive, the thing that we've poured all our attention into over the last 5 years, that's going to be, you know, from now on, one of the things that we do is our seven-month learning program, which is from March to October every year. And we have sign-ups and applications opening from December every year. So if you want to do that, you can just, again, get in contact with me, emma@dgmt.co.za, or go to our website, which is amplifymobilizechange.org. And if you're interested in signing up for that, we can keep you on the list and just let you know when the applications open again.
And we'll have all of that information on the Learning Lunch page. If you are listening on Spotify, go to the Learning Lunch page to see how you can get involved with Amplify Mobilize Change. Zama, what campaigns are currently running for Activate and how can people get involved?
One of our most important campaigns is called Hashtag We Are Voting, where we are mobilizing young people and their communities to register to vote. We are encouraging anyone and everyone to visit our website. It's www.activateleadership.co.za. Here you'll find information in terms of where we are in the country with the, you know, activations that we are hosting. We're going to communities across the country and we're hosting dialogues with the IEC and the UNDP to find out, you know, how can you vote? How can you, you know, register to vote? How can we really leverage off of our vote as being our voice? And so we're having this campaign right up until we get to the elections, where we, you know, envision to register as many young people as we can, because we believe that if all young people go and register to vote and actually participate in the voting, we will really see a change in the status quo in our country.
I want to round off today's conversation by thanking our two guests. What we've learned today is that by harnessing the power of communications tools, active citizenry or active communities can be promoted effectively by increasing awareness, facilitating dialogue, creating relationships, mobilizing individuals, and fostering a sense of collective responsibility and participation. And now, over to you, those listening to this podcast. Using what you have heard today, you can try this reflective exercise. You'll need a pen and paper to write down these steps or download the takeaway sheet from our website, learninglunch.dgmt.co.za. Write down the following questions and spend some time reflecting on them by yourself, and then share your reflections with your colleagues. Question number one. What communication tools do you have at your disposal? Question number two, what does your community need and how can you effectively use communications tools to meet those needs? Question number three, what is currently standing in your organization's way as it tries to embrace communications tools for community work? Question number four, think back to a past campaign. How could you have used communications tools more effectively to create the impact you wanted? Question number five. If you had to do an elevator pitch to your organization's leader, arguing in favor of the value of communications, what would it be? This was DGMT's Learning Lunch. Until next time.